Welcome, everybody, to episode 284 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, August 9th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going,
Triple man? Jay, whichever one you want to call him. You know, I alternate every week. There's so many different names for you. Mostly good.
Mostly good. That sounds about right.
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself? Having a good week so far?
So far, so good. Yeah, I'm learning a lot of React, which is fun.
Good for you. A lot of rumors out there that could be the language of choice for JavaScript language of choice going forward in WordPress, which we've talked about before. Anyways, we got a great show lined up today. I've been looking forward to this. It's going to be like a blast from the past for me. And that is because our guest today is David Peralti, who long time listeners of the show may remember that he was a co-host of WordPress Weekly, in fact, from episode 41, which is on February 7, 2009, to episode 75 on October 7, 2009. And on the first time he came on the show, I dubbed him the Angry Canadian because he always provided like the curmudgeonous or devil's advocate view of everything we were talking about. Because at the time, I was really knee deep into this. I was fanboyish, I guess.
Yes, that's exactly what I call it.
Okay, there you go. And David, there he is. There's the voice of the man of the hour here. And man, you know, it's so cool to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, it's really weird to be here, but I'm super stoked.
Old co-host, meet new co-host.
Hello.
Hey, yeah, maybe Triple J and I should just talk because, I mean, we've worked for similar companies and we've been around for a long time. And we'll just ignore Jeff and we'll just have a great old talk about WordPress. And
we'll have bonus content and tell me things about TinyUp that nobody else should hear.
Oh, boy.
We'll have that in the after show. anyways, man, yeah, it's been a long time. I've followed you on Twitter. I followed your travels. I know that you've been in and out of and you've been doing some personal projects, but what have you been up to recently?
That's a strange word. As I get older, recently just seems longer and longer. So I worked for TinyUp for over a year, and I got to learn really kind of the ins and outs of project management in an agency position, which was interesting. I mean, at this point, when I go around and I do like a job interview, one of the first things I say is I've pretty much done everything you can do in WordPress at this point. I think the only thing I haven't done is like contributed to core, which I know, shame on me, but maybe someday. And then more recently, I worked with Innovate Kingston, which is a nonprofit here in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. And they put on the Breakout Project, which was a 48-hour Kickstarter hackathon style event that was live streamed. And I was responsible for the tech stuff. So everything from, you know, desktop support and printers all the way up through fiber optic internet connection to a historical site. And I did the marketing site and helped, you know, project manage the platform development. And pretty much all of it was built on WordPress, BuddyPress, and then some customizations. So, yeah.
Nice.
Ooh, John's ears just perked up.
And now, actually, I just got a position with XWP as a team lead.
Oh, fantastic. Because later on in the show, I know you've been looking for employment. We've been putting out the retweets for you and the recommendations. So very, very happy to hear that you got a position for XWP, which Weston Reuter is a part of. I've also spoken to some other members who have worked at XWP, a fantastic agency and organization, and great contributors to the WordPress project.
Yeah, and on the side, actually, I'm spinning up another company with a longtime colleague of mine, and that should be announced probably in the next week, and hopefully it'll be interesting to the WordPress community. It will have press in its name, but that's all I can say about it.
Now, I know there's a project you've been working on called THIA.
Yeah.
What does that mean, and tell us a little bit about what that project's about?
So when I first started with Innovate Kingston, the projects that we had the Breakout Project for were all social good projects. They, you know, one of them is called 1 Million Teachers. Another one's Change for Dollar, which is about fundraising digitally for all these different things. You know, we don't necessarily care around. We don't have pennies in Canada anymore, so we can't carry them around and give them out to charities in those little boxes anymore. So people have to figure out new ways to donate to the causes that are important to them. For me, I had this brainwave idea of mental health. I suffer from depression and anxiety. I've have for about 20 years. And I see that only rising, especially in Canada. And so I wanted to kind of start working towards creating learning content for youth to be able to kind of better manage or identify mental health issues in themselves and advocate for themselves. And so I'm working on putting that together using LearnDash as the main LMS product and WordPress as kind of the CMS. And so, yeah, it's still in development, but I'm enjoying working on it.
So you mentioned a project related to mental health. I kind of want to get your take on what you've seen in the WordPress community as of late. I'd say within the past 2 years, a lot more heavily within the past year. But we have all these different projects now related to mental health awareness, these issues. In fact, I did a mental health awareness roundtable here a few months ago. Yeah. It seems to be a hot topic in the WordPress community these days.
And rightly so. I mean, it's funny, especially as remote workers, it totally makes sense that we really start to spend some time thinking about this. I really love what Open Sourcing Mental Illness is doing. If you don't know the site, it's osmihelp.org. You know, I think that especially, you know, as a project manager, it's not necessarily, in my opinion, as bad as what a lot of engineers deal with in terms of kind of that feeling of isolation or segregation or compartmentalization in the companies or agencies or, you know, independent work that they do. So, you know, I really think that it's great to see it finally kind of getting a big spotlight put on it. And, you know, we talk endlessly about, you know, cancer and how horrible that is. And, you know, all kinds of other diseases aren't really hidden behind a curtain. And so why should this?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, between the WordCamps and the sessions and the different websites out there, and even Funkatron, osmihelp.org that you just referenced, you know, fantastic initiatives out there on raising awareness of mental health, especially for organizations who may not, you know, invest in or know so much there is to know about mental health.
Yeah, and I think most people are afraid to talk about it, right? Like I'm a team lead.
Yeah, there's that
I'm
whole stigma factor too with it.
Yeah, I'm supposed to have all the answers. I'm supposed to exude confidence and help my team feel like they can achieve whatever goals are set in front of them. And the idea that someone in my position would need like a mental health day to recharge or kind of deal with the stresses that are happening in my life in a positive way just kind of puts those two things at odds, I think, in a lot of people's minds. So yeah, it's a process and we're getting better about it, I think.
So as I like to do on this show, I invite you to step into my DeLorean and we're going to go back in time and reminisce about the good old days, or, you know, to me, they were the good old days, and talk about some things that happened in the past and maybe get your take on some of the things that are going now with WordPress development and stuff of that nature. But, you know, you were part of that memorable group of people at WordCamp Chicago 2009. That's the first time I had a chance to meet you in person. We have been colleagues and worked together, have known of each other before then. Right. And you were part of this group of people, as I was at the time, to see a demo of Gravity Forms before it was released to the public. In fact, I have an image of you looking at the screen with the Gravity Forms team around you as you're checking it out. And at one point, you worked for Rocket Genius. Tell us about your experience there for the company, what you like most about that plugin, and what do you think of Gravity Forms today,
Ooh-hoo.
All these years later?
Yeah.
No pressure. Let's talk about all of your old colleagues.
where you used to work.
To finish. Go.
Okay. So, I mean, the easiest way to start that conversation is the fact that you know, Carl, the owner, one of the co-owners or co-founders of Rocket Genius, really kind of saved my bacon by hiring me on. I was downsized from a company that, you know, made some bad business moves, unfortunately. And that meant I came back from a vacation and the next day I was basically told, hey, we're downsizing your position. You're no longer needed. And so I kind of freaked out and went, oh, I need a job. And so I contacted Carl hoping that he could connect me to maybe someone else in the industry that was looking, and he ended up hiring me on instead. I did support marketing for a long time. And, you know, I've always been a huge fan of Gravity Forms and I still am today. And the only reason I left, and I kick myself for this all the time, is that I was young and I really wanted to move up very quickly in an organization. I had that kind of, and I hate to say this, and people are going to probably light me on fire for it at some point, but that millennial attitude of, you know, I want promotions, I want more responsibility, I want to grow quickly. And unfortunately, what that meant was that I wasn't going to move to the States and be part of the office in Virginia to work with the Rocket Genius team. And you know, that's really how the company is structured other than support, is that in-house collaborative, you know, team feel. And the couple of times that they brought me down there to hang out with the team or celebrate Christmas or successes with the team, some of the most fun I've ever had in my life. And, you know, I think that's why I kind of kicked myself for it. Like, why would you leave such a good role? But at the time I didn't realize that, you know, how good I had it in a lot of ways. And so I, it's funny, if you go to like my LinkedIn profile, you'll see afterwards, I kind of stumbled around almost in the dark trying to figure out, well, what the heck do I do now? Until I really kind of hit on this project management side. So yeah, I love what they're doing at Rocket Genius. I think that they really need to raise their prices for Gravity Forms because, I mean, they're releasing even new add-ons. Whoever they have working on their marketing these days is doing an amazing job of promoting kind of the ecosystem that has existed for a long time, but really never been promoted before. So we're starting to see all kinds of third-party add-ons being promoted from Rocket Genius, and that I think is just amazing.
Yeah, I remember back in the day when Gravity Forms was a sponsor on WordPress Weekly, and we had ad copy. You were more than willing to read the ad copy for Gravity Forms. You know, it was an easy sell for you.
Yeah, and I think in the WordPress ecosystem, like in terms of like all the plugins and themes and premium everything that started coming out back around the exact same time that Gravity Forms did, I think that was the only one of the few things that I was actually really fanboy about. Because I never saw it as like just another form plugin, like competitors to like CF7 at the time or Contact Form 7. I saw it really as a data collection tool. And I think that mindset, like there's very few things that I personally, even with my limited programming knowledge, can't build with Gravity Forms in terms of collecting user data and presenting something back. So it's amazing tool.
Yeah, for me at the time when I saw the demo, I was very familiar. In fact, I used Contact Form 7, I believe, on the Tavern to Power the Contact Form. And there were other form plugins out there. But when I saw, what sold me was their interface and how it blended into WordPress, and it seemed seamless. it was like native to WordPress, and you could drag and drop fields, and it was intuitive. And I, you know, that's when I knew. I said, this is going to take off. And I'm still waiting on royalties, but but yeah, it sure has taken off. And by the way, that your sentiments on your experience there at Rocket Genius, I had the opportunity to visit the Rocket Genius office and work from there with a couple of the other Rocket Genius colleagues. Virginia Beach is where their office is located. And I got to say, after working remotely by myself, whether in the house or wherever it is, you know, a team of two, but my coworker is in Oklahoma, I really, it like opened my eyes to how much I missed being in a room of people on the same team working on a project. And to have that flexibility of, well, if you don't feel like coming into the office today or you're busy, you know, you can get your work done at home. Or if you want the feeling of working with the team and being in the same office together and going out to lunch, you know, they have great lunches. Yeah. That's a great perk of the company. And plus it's a cool office. Then you have that option as well. And even though I don't work for Rocket Genius, my experience at the visiting the place and talking to the colleagues there and just kind of getting a feel for it was amazing. And it kind of has me really sort of wanting that inkling again to be on a team, to be part of something, all working together on the same project and having that camaraderie. That's one thing I really miss. Now, I know there's meetup groups and co-working spaces, but I don't know. None of that stuff kind of does anything for me.
You know who else does that is the iThemes team. The team over at iThemes has an office. And
oh, yeah.
The majority of them are all in the same office all day working on stuff together, various stuff, some research and development, some skunk work stuff. But their team and the culture that they have fostered with one another, and the, I would say, employee retention they have as a result of the camaraderie and the family really that they've built. If anybody, if Corey's listening, or if anyone that knows Corey and the rest of them are they really firmly believe in having a warm, welcoming environment, and welcoming people into the office and taking care of them, making sure people are comfortable. And I agree. It's after working from home or working remote for a really long time that it's nice having an office or a place to go to and having the same people around or a routine. And I imagine that's probably why we go for coffee in the mornings, not because we really enjoy spending $5 for a latte, but because we sort of need some interaction with people throughout the day. And if that's it, then I guess that's it. So,
yeah, but I think you hit on a really important point, though, in terms of culture, because, I mean, I've worked half of my career in office and half of my career remote. And I will say that when you're working in an office with great people, it's amazing. It's energizing. It's rejuvenating. It's fun. It's engaging. If you're working in an office with people that are almost like pulling you in different directions or kind of countering the energy that you're trying to bring to the table, then it can be draining and frustrating and feel like, you know, days are languishing on. So I think that's kind of an important point there. I think if you know, Jeff, like I completely understand what you're saying. I, as an introvert, I don't necessarily need as much kind of human-to-human interaction as I think a lot of people do. But even I find that if I don't hit that right balance of interacting with other people, it the whole thing kind of gets soured. And especially as someone who's like, it ties back to what I said before, who suffers from mental health issues, kind of finding that balance in terms of maintaining my personal happiness is important. So while I am working remotely again for XWP, you know, I can definitely see where the need is going to come into existence, where I'm going to need to be able to socialize with people. Thankfully, I've already found out that some of the team is in Toronto and Windsor, which are all in the same province as me. So I should be able to maybe co-work here and there with some of them to kind of get that need fulfilled.
Awesome.
Yeah. Looking back over the years, remember when there were things called blog networks and, mm-hmm. you know, there was Splash Press Media. In fact, I was looking back in the past. We both worked for Splash Press Media. You did Blogging Pro. I was writing for Performancing, which was a major site at the time devoted to blogging, how to make money with blogging, all that jazz. You know, that's when Pro Blogger was a big deal. I mean, I imagine it probably still is a big deal. But sort of looking back on it over the years, B5 Media, that was another big time blog network. Yeah. Are blog networks still around? And sort of, I don't know, is there anything looking back on the nature of blog networks, anything you reminisce about them or speak about their past or history in the realm of blogging?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely still exist. I think at every kind of tier of traffic, you'll be able to find them. They're usually a lot like more niche specific than kind of Splash Press, which was trying to do a little bit of everything. But yeah, they definitely still exist, and I still think they have their place. What's interesting to me is actually seeing a lot of big brands, big media companies, basically over the last few years trying to figure out, like, do we build a blog or do we just kind of jump on social media or do we, like, how do we engage our user base in this new way? And I think that they a lot of times miss the point. The long form articles that we can read online these days and the things that we can learn and absorb from them and the quality of the content that now exists in like blogs and even in some of the blog networks, the higher tier blog networks, is just absolutely amazing. And, you know, I can't, you know, looking back and looking at where we are now, I can't even imagine, you know, running, you know, like a great example for me is The Verge. That blog, you know, you have a company that was doing like a sports blog, a sports website, and all of a sudden they're like, you know what, we're going to get in the tech space and create the next big tech blog. And everyone kind of laughed at them like, ha ha, you can't create a tech blog anymore. That niche is saturated. And now I visit that darn site every single day because they have some of the best content I've ever read in terms of technology. So I think that's the direction. If you want to get into the space these days, you really have to understand that as low as the barrier to entry is, in terms of technology, the content barrier to entry is huge if you really want to be successful in the space.
Yeah, well said. Back in 2013, so about 4 years ago, I asked you this question. I said, what are your general observations of the WordPress project? And I want to read you your response because I think it's kind of cool to look back on it. But you said, I think that WordPress's legacy code is currently its biggest potential downfall, and I hope they take the advice of some people smarter than I and look at releasing two branches for a year or two, one that supports legacy code and one that is a more modern rewrite. I know Matt himself would love to be involved in that. Build an application framework instead of trying to extend blogging software that probably still has some backwards compatible code from 10 years ago hidden in it. Like other pieces of software before them, the world is now theirs to lose. Some small upstart could become the new popular publishing system in the next 2 to 5 years if WordPress doesn't continue to evolve to meet the needs of consumers, designers, and developers. So let me ask you that same question 4 years later. What are your observations of the WordPress project?
John, do you want to handle that question?
I mean,
why don't you give your answer first?
My observations are that your previous observations seem eerily accurate.
I know, and that's why I wanted to bring it up.
and that's kind of all I have to say about that without starting on a 15-minute rant about Backpress, which no one wants to hear me talk about anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the exact same problems, which actually kind of surprises me. I thought the WP API the WordPress API was really going to free us from that problem a little bit. I don't see any huge reason why a lot of the backwards compatibility couldn't be kind of handled through that. I mean, it would make for a heavier initial WordPress install. But anyways, beyond talking about the solutions that they could potentially take, I don't see the upstart that I expected at this point. I thought Ghost was really going to be it, and what happened? Like, where the heck did Ghost go? A lot of people, I think, were talking about Medium being like the next big thing, and already we're seeing kind of people revert away from that. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know why the publishing space doesn't have that next great competitor yet, and I don't really understand why WordPress as a you know, even like .com is not talking about, you know, the redevelopment of this publishing framework to meet modern demands. We're all switching more and more to video, to audio, to, you know, rich media and not just text. And I don't think that WordPress currently has the best control systems and management systems for that.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that WordPress ended up doing, I like to think maybe organically, but then I know that folks like Matt and even some of the my old colleagues on the VIP team and Automatic and connections that people have made kind of geared WordPress up to be the three tier. Like, you've got it's easy for individuals to publish content to the web easily. It's good for the other end of the spectrum for the VIP style clients that are the Sports Illustrated or the golf.com or the Time magazines of the world, where they have really intense needs on the web. But then we have this meaty middle too, where plugins and themes can kind of help every user adapt WordPress in kind of any situation. So the other publishing platforms ended up kind of being suffocated out of the room a little bit by needing to be their own niche sort of blogging type networks like Tumblr or the Squarespace style site builders, or they kind of had to serve a very specific purpose to get off the ground. And then you're right that Ghost is really the only WordPress style piece of software that's out there right now that is actively developed, has upward momentum, is being...
Which, by the way, Ghost just released a 1.0, a huge release. It's their 100th release, and it has a...
1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. Like, day to day, I saw John talking about new features that they pushed every day that week. Yeah. It was incredible, actually, the momentum that Ghost has. But you're right that it still isn't at the caliber... or the expectations aren't as high as with something like WordPress. But the one thing that I think I see differently now than I would have seen in 2010 or any back when backpress was even an option, is I think back then it might have even been premature to optimize for forking development, for getting rid of that legacy code base. I kind of think now we may have a ways to go before the code base actually is as legacy feeling, or legacy feeling enough to go, okay, now is really the time to start pulling some of that old stuff out. Like, we still have an incomplete REST API. We don't have anything really like GraphQL or anything in it yet. We don't have a legitimately separated front end for React or Vue or Preact or any of those
right.
things yet. Like, there's a lot of opportunity to put stuff in that will eventually need to get taken back out. And so,
we like Backbone.
Yes, right.
Like Backbone. But you mentioned the words application framework, and I thought that was poignant because Matt has brought those words up a couple of times during his State of the Words. But we mentioned publishers like Medium. Medium at one point was the bee's knees. It was the hot topic. But Sarah Gooding published an article on WP Tavern a few days ago saying that publishers are moving back to WordPress now after a short experiment with Medium. Now, we talk about the All, Think Progress, Film School Rejects, and a number of other publishers who switched to Medium because at the time there was a pretty nice deal that Medium was offering them to help them out with monetization of their websites. But it turns out that things have changed over time, and Medium went with a new $5 subscription program, and it turns out that they were making some changes to the platform that weren't in the best interest of publishers. So a lot of publishers said, well, you know, I'm getting out of here. And now they're ending up going back to WordPress, where they end up having more control and being able to do what they want to do. But a lot of them have said that, well, you know, it was an experiment at the time. So they're able to take what they've learned from being on Medium from a year, maybe apply that to a different CMS, whether that's WordPress or whatever else. However, I read an interesting comment on this article that says, you know, so it was by David Scarjun, and he says that, so key publishing company users weren't at Medium for the writing experience, but rather they were in it for the business model. And he goes on to say, now they come back to WordPress for freedom of choice in both software platform and business model. Big publishers need options, control, and reliability in roadmapping your futures. Doesn't this undermine some of the justification for Gutenberg? So, okay, this is now Gutenberg's being brought up, but that comment kind of goes, made me think a little bit, where, you know, none of these publishers that said they were going back to WordPress specifically said, well, it's because of the writing process, it's because of the, you know, the experience, it was because of the ability to be able to do the business model you want. It was a business model, it was the money over the experience that was the motivating factor. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Isn't that always the case though, right? You gotta go where the money is, and I think, you know, you can look through pretty much the entire history of the web, and any time that you build your business on someone else's platform, where you don't really, you know, it's someone else's sandbox and you don't really control it, you eventually see that a big upheaval or change or revision or exodus happens at some point or another.
And Dan Noss had an excellent comment. He says, own the medium of production versus get owned by Medium. I thought that was pretty good. So speaking of Gutenberg, this is the oh my god BBQ WTF we have dragons editor that's being worked on for WordPress. It's a block based editor. Have you been following developments on it? And if so, or maybe have you even tested it yet? You know, what are your thoughts on the editor?
So I've been following its progress very closely, and I love the idea of it. I can't wait until it's actually at a usable state. Here's my like use case for it. I'm looking to replace all those blasted builder plugins that now exist that throw, you know, a million lines of CSS and JavaScript into the front end of a theme to be able to customize and move blocks around. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of some of them in terms of how quickly they've let me iterate on a new build, but I feel like integrating some of this into core and having themes just kind of support showing the content will be a much better experience and much more performant if done right. I think in its current state, it's pretty weak right now. But I mean, that's part of the problem with kind of letting the community see everything or promote everything as it's happening, I guess.
The comments on the Tavern, I mean, we've been keeping up on Gutenberg development, and
yeah, you have to stop posting about it. That's the problem.
Well, it's important.
It's not done yet.
I know it's not done yet. Unfortunately, many people are looking at it as if it is, and it's they say it's beta, but it still feels like alpha software in many respects. There's a lot of people, a lot of hardworking volunteers and people crushing away in Gutenberg on a weekly basis. But the comments I've seen lately from people are saying things like, does it matter that people who are working on this even care about, you know, this feature or backwards compatibility or meta boxes or how developers are going to interface with this or how clients are going to do this? And of course they care. I mean, Automatic's got a lot to lose with this, you know, because if they end up putting Gutenberg into the .com editor, it could be bang or bust, you know, win or lose, I would say. You know, there's a lot of people in the WordPress.org space ecosystem that have a lot to gain if this takes WordPress up to the next level. And I think they all care. I think they all care about backwards compatibility. That's why all these discussions are taking place. And right now it's just a hodgepodge of anger and disgust because it's not in a usable state. And as it's everything is kind of like is transparent, and we're able to see this, you know, the next big thing possibly happen in real time. But man, it must be so hard for the developers. John, I think we talked about this before, where it's just you're getting mud slung on you time and time and time again, and it's like, okay, well, just hold on, wait for the next version or a couple versions, and then tell us what you think. And yeah, I'm looking at everything that's been taking place within the past few weeks. I'm like, thank God we never did design or develop by committee.
It's sort of the penalty that you pay for working out in the open, I guess, especially on something that is as high profile as Gutenberg and potentially replacing TinyMCE at some point is eventually why companies choose to work privately, is just to avoid the public backlash and the distractions of having to deal with people that are upset about kind of nothing yet. They completely take away from the creative process, the learning process, the team of, at this point, you know, volunteers paid or not, to make something kind of magical happen here. If they spend half of a day trying to look at the feedback or issues or comments, and they're all negative or they're all not polite or useful or constructive or anything else, and one person's interpretation of polite or nice or constructive is obviously going to be different than another person. So, but it still is a huge bummer to work really hard on something and you feel accomplished, and then at the end of the day, the feedback is like, it's not good enough yet. It's not good enough yet. Like, we gotta give them some room to operate here, I feel like.
I will also say that I still use the text editor rather than the visual editor for every WordPress site that I work on and add content to. So I know that I'm not necessarily the target market for this, but I also work with a lot of end users, and what they're looking for is a simple way to really kind of control content in a very pretty kind of way and be able to lay out a page without feeling like they're overwhelmed. And I definitely feel like this experience, even how it looks today, could get them a lot of the way there. Like, this is going to save them a lot of, you know, headaches and heartaches when it comes to kind of designing their content.
And the other thing that gets overlooked there is the idea, the centralizing all these various concepts into one thing you have to learn. So you don't have to learn widgets, short codes, bits of code, custom HTML, and all these other things you have to learn. Everything is a block.
Yep. And I think Gutenberg's going to put all of the form builders or the block builders or Gravity Forms or Beaver Builder or the Divi theme. It's not necessarily putting anybody out of business, right? Like, it's still for content, the content-specific blocks.
Well, you know,
but it, they, it, but I just, so my caveat is that if the goal is to have this built into core, then I think that we will probably start to see some level of unification across all of these form builders or page layout builders and have them tighten up. Because if you've paid any attention to all of them, they are all 100% completely different takes on what does a visual kind of layout builder look like in WordPress, from taking over WP Admin entirely to fitting into WP in very...
Or like I saw yesterday, there's a way to build in the page builder using widgets via the customizer. And that actually looked pretty cool.
And so it's neat that everybody's experimenting with all these different ways of doing this. But one of the problems that I think we end up having, and this has kind of plagued WordPress for a really long time, and this is, I think, ultimately why it is really important for WordPress to make a decision, is... you know, back in the day when text messaging was first invented, the SMS protocol wasn't even inter-carrier. You could only send text messages from one AT&T person to another or from one Verizon person to another. And so eventually all of these carriers had to learn together how to support the same platform. And then for a really long time, you couldn't port your telephone number from one carrier to another. You just had to change your telephone number and you lost your old one. And so... Yeah. We have all of these builders, but there's never any interoperability between them. You just abandon one and switch to the other. And so while we may end up with a brief period of time where there is this multiple all over the place problem, WordPress making the full-on statement that this is the way to do this going forward now sort of forces everyone to realign themselves with what the standard is. And even if it's different takes on the UI, at least it's all the same portable format underneath it all. So that, I think, ultimately is the biggest reason to have Gutenberg in core right away, is just to get everybody to agree on what to agree on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you or either of you, but if you ever build a site out of Divi, I love that thing. I slapped together a marketing site for the Breakout Project in under 4 days that looked and functioned really cool. But if you ever disable Divi or try to change to another theme once you have it all set up and you see like the million short codes that they've put in everywhere, you just want to weep.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you're 100% bang on, and I'm like, yes, please get some standardization in terms of how these things are managed so that we don't have that issue of being locked in.
And as we remember when we had David Kennedy on the show, and actually he's written an article about this, that the next big thing with WordPress themes, and it kind of dovetails, ties together what's going on with Gutenberg, which could translate into the customizer, and you could get this really cool this cool effect of everything kind of working together to create this awesome editing and site customization experience. And I'm looking forward to seeing how themes utilize both Gutenberg and the customizer when all of that stuff is polished and works together really well, like a well-oiled machine. And, you know, it would be great to get to that point and just sort of look back and go, wow, I can't believe we survived that minefield.
Well, that's one of the things that made BuddyPress really popular, is the fact that as much as it was kind of painful to use back in the day, it came with a fully fleshed out WordPress theme to show you what it could do. And so when something like post formats was introduced into WordPress however many years ago, there was no theme that utilized it like deeply to the core. And the ones that did weren't all super captivating. And so it didn't really sell the new feature very well. And so for Gutenberg or for context aware blocks or whatever we want to call the pieces to shine, then it's going to take someone who's deeply comfortable with what the output can do and make it do really, really great things for people to go, oh, this is, I kind of have to use this or risk being behind the curve. And if it doesn't have that, which is going to, it's a completely separate project in and of itself, but it really does need it in order for it to feel complete and for everyone that isn't on board to feel like they need to be on board, regardless of what they maybe thought yesterday. So
the good thing there is, in addition to the Gutenberg project, there's actually a theme that's being developed alongside with it that actually is used to not only test and prototype, but actually visually show you, you know, what Gutenberg is capable of. So like you said, having a theme that it shows it off, I'm glad that somebody from the core team who's also working on Gutenberg is working on AND as well. So by the time it gets to a point where it's really polished, they should have a really cool theme that people can look at and say, oh, wow, Gutenberg could do some cool stuff.
Here's my idea that there was a theme. This is me looking for this theme live on the show. That's what's happening.
Here's my concern, though. John, you could probably speak a lot more to this than I could, because I've really kind of gotten out of this space, but I feel like there's more technical debt now or knowledge needed to be able to build out a theme for WordPress that is like performant and useful and has these features. Back in like my 2.0 days or like my 1.6 days of making a theme for WordPress, you know, I could slap one of those together pretty quickly and pretty easily. And now it seems like there's a lot more work to do a really good WordPress theme.
I think the expectations are higher because the web is just a more complicated place. So I think our own internal expectations on what a good website looks like is just way different than what it was back then. So it's underneath it all. It's kind of all still the same bits and bobs, and you kind of make it do all the same stuff. But because everyone wants parallax scrolling and, you know, blocks of this and that with images that know where you are in the page, it's just there's a lot more that the web is capable of, that browsers are capable of. And part of me, too, I think, thinks that we also see what other, like, more interactive pieces of software like React are capable of doing, and realizing how maybe WordPress just isn't optimized to make those kinds of experiences very pleasant inside of itself or even within the theme engine. So what do we do with that? It's you end up building all this functionality into a theme, and the theme like Divi, which is hugely, insanely powerful and comes with lots of awesome stuff baked into it by default. It's almost a no-brainer if what you want to do is not reinvent all of those wheels over and over again, is use Divi to get something out the door really quick and then worry about it later, which, to be honest, is why people use WordPress in the first place, is because they don't want to worry about pretty permalinks or setting up URL routes or categories and tags and all that stuff. You use WordPress because it just gives you those things for free. So
so you're saying everyone should use Divi is what you're saying.
I am not allowed to endorse anything like that. But I had never used it until I moved a site over for a friend of mine, and their designer and their developer had used Divi just to make everything happen. And so I kind of was forced into looking at it and logging in and moving the data over and making sure it was all good. And in the process of that, you have to log into the site. You have to click around and make sure everything looks okay. And I was like, oh, so this is the Divi that everyone is talking about. Like, let's actually look at this. And then it just becomes like, it's just pretty evident that the reason that Divi exists is because nothing really existed before it. And the only other way to do it is just too many pieces.
And for non-technical people, like, there's this huge sense of empowerment when you first like drag in like a slider element or, you know, all these different things that it actually comes with, and it allows you to do that front end design, and it makes you feel like you're a WordPress god for a moment when you like pulling all these things in and publish and done. But yeah,
the analogy that I use is that you don't buy a puzzle one piece at a time,
right?
But if you did, you would never figure out how to put the pieces together. And so themes like Divi come with all the pieces, and then you get to put the puzzle together yourself. Like, it seems like pretty clear to me that that's why it's popular.
Well, I kind of wish David was still around with Blogging Pro. I mean, he'd have so much to write about these days. He could be doing Gutenberg post every day.
No, I wouldn't promote it. I wouldn't. I'd be like, no, we're not going to say anything about it until it's ready, because everyone's going to freak out.
Yeah.
Well,
good job, Jeff.
Pay hate Jews. So looking back, you're not going anywhere. You're sticking around the community and whatnot. But I thought it'd be cool to kind of ask you within the last, I don't know, let's say 9 or 10 years, what are some of your fondest memories you have in the WordPress community? I mean, for me, I really enjoyed when I was first getting into the WordPress space and learning everything there was to know, listening to you and Charles Strickland, which Charles, to me, is the podfather of WordPress podcast. You know, he had the original one, the WordPress Community Podcast, and you were a co-host on there, and that was good stuff, good listening.
Yeah, I would say one of my favorite moments was when Blogging Pro got kicked out of the WordPress newsfeed. That was a good one.
Do you have any idea why, or is that confidential?
No, I totally know why. It's twofold. One, who the heck is this David guy, and why should we let him have access to every WordPress site, basically pushing whatever content he wants? Yeah. And number two, the word on high was not just to talk about WordPress anymore. It was to really talk about web publishing. And so why would we let someone who's not just talking about WordPress on the newsfeed as well? And so it was removed. And Jacob Goer, who is the owner of the site, I think, all his hair turned gray that day because the traffic drop was just immense. But I was all giddy because that really meant that I didn't have that huge audience to satisfy. I could really say whatever the heck I wanted, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and over the years, one of the goals for the tavern for me was to get in that news feed, the WordPress news feed that shows up in the dashboard of everybody's sites. And we worked really hard for it. I had a lot of people in the tavern community sort of pushing for me, trying to get Matt's attention to get in the dashboard. And one day, I got it was a text message or a phone call or something on my phone. I was in the mall and I received word that the tavern was in the dashboard. I'm like, yay, fantastic. And I learned that you got to talk about GP only products. You can't advertise or talk about anything that's not really GPL related. You got to be WordPress specific. And, the traffic there was great for a while. And then I started thinking, it would have been a lot nicer, I think, if it was just tied to my WordPress category. And that way it would allow me to open up and write about other things as well that may be related to WordPress, but not specifically. But now, the whole site's been there and we've been writing about WordPress for the past couple of years. But yeah, I also see the other side of the coin where you're not having to please that specific audience, and you don't have to limit your content to within a certain group of rules.
Yeah, and I wasn't mad about it or upset about it. And I think a lot of community members thought I was going to be irate over the whole thing or angry about the whole thing. And even though I was young and naive, I was kind of like, yeah, I can now do whatever I want, and I don't have to worry about 50,000 or 100,000 people or whatever it was back then seeing any of these articles that I'm posting, because I was so self-conscious when I first started out as a professional blogger, because I had no idea if anything I was writing was worth anything. And sometimes I listen back on our old podcasts or on the Charles Strickland ones, or read some of my old articles on Blogging Pro. And I'm like, please delete. So, it's funny, as you get older, all you see is the naivete of your youth. And, I really enjoyed that time, though. I really enjoyed writing about WordPress. I really enjoyed being part of the community. And I also enjoyed kind of being forgotten by it. And it's been nice to not have to worry about the horrible themes that I published like 8 years ago that hopefully no one uses because they're probably super insecure and horribly performance-wise. And I doubt they even work with the new versions of WordPress, hopefully. Things like that. It's such a long history, and I'm glad I don't always have to carry that baggage around with me.
Well, when I asked you, where are they now, David Peralta, published an interview with you, catching up with you back in 2013. In the interview, you said that your biggest hope since falling into the background was to have mattered, that your contribution had an effect. So I wanted to tell you today personally that your contributions did and continue to have an effect, mostly positive. Who knows about the people using your themes today and, that may be insecure. But I want to personally thank you for writing so much about WordPress in its early days, because it adds to the fabric of history for the project. mostly unbiased history. And if we look back in time, there's Blogging Pro, there was eventually weblogtoolscollection.com, and then at some point the Tavern started up, and that kind of disappeared, and we had WP Daily and then WP Candy, and then those two kind of fluttered, and then the Tavern came back, and you put all those sites together that specifically were WordPress-centric and were news-based sites, so they were publishing multiple times a week, sometimes multiple times a day. You have a pretty good catalog or archive of WordPress historical events throughout there, and you were a huge part of that, so I want to thank you for that.
Thanks. I'm blushing on this side, I guess.
Because every now and then I do a couple Google searches to go back in the vault, and I'll come across some articles you've written. And
I'm sorry.
No, it's good stuff.
I think to Jeff's point, I think the thing that makes that the mark that you've left the most important is that WordPress is all about online publishing. If you look at the history of the semi-quasi-official history of WordPress that's published on WordPress.org, it's more about the software and the early days and the team and you know, kind of Matt and other core contributors' recollection of WordPress in the early days. It is less about the publications that were involved and that were relevant or that were, you know, sources of independent thought and feedback about the software or the community back then. And so not that we have fake news or alternative news, but there is something to be said for the sites back then that were reporting their independent perspective on things versus anything that was pretend quasi officially endorsed in one way or another or in the feed or what have you. So
I needed a David Perolti for my fan. Right. That's the positive effect he had on me being my, were you yin or you, were you yang? I don't know which.
I'll go yin. You know, it's funny because it's always been a weird balance, right? And I mean, both of you can speak to this as well because it's your lives as well. You don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. I've received so much from WordPress as a publishing platform. It's done so much for my life and my career. I can't imagine it not existing. But on the flip side, you know, you really want to make sure that it really becomes the best it can be with whatever little bit that you can add to it.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of writing, I had one question I wanted to ask you to get your perspective through your lens. One of the reasons you enjoyed reading The Tavern back in the day is that I didn't have an agenda. And as you've kept up with The Tavern from your perspective, has that changed since Matt Mullenweg has purchased the site? Have you noticed a change? I mean, do I have an agenda now? Am I Matt's puppet?
I'm going to shout objection because this question seems a little loaded. You're asking like your own friend whether or not he thinks that you have a biased opinion on this? I feel like you've loaded this question.
No, I didn't
actually.
That.
No, he didn't. Funnily enough, I would say that as the publishing standard has gotten higher on the Tavern, your personality, the thing that connects me to the WordPress community today, the heart of the WordPress community, is not as strong as it once was. I will say that there's not an agenda on the website, but I will say that it is not the lovable Tavern that I remember a long time ago, because now it has more of that corporate feel. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It definitely serves its audience, and the reporting is much more detailed than it was back then, but it doesn't have that kind of lovable fanboyism as much anymore, and I hope that you find a way to really rekindle that.
I will accept that.
Well, you and I feel the same way. So you and I agree on that. I feel the same way.
So why do you feel that way, Jeff?
That's a loaded question. I object, object, sir.
I mean, I don't know the answer to that question.
That's so. More loaded than a baked potato. All right. We'll talk about that on some other time. I don't want to talk about it right here, right now. I usually talk about anything, but not about that. Not yet.
That's fair.
All right. So, David, hour's almost up. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and kind of going back on this
trip in memory lane and let me load up Mr. Fusion while I get to drive my DeLorean back in time. Awesome to hear that things are going good for you. I'm really happy that you got found a great position with a good WordPress agency. And tell people how people can get in touch with you and follow the work that you're doing in various projects.
The best spot is my personal blog, which is actually on WordPress.com, by the way. It's Peralty.com, which is my last name, which no one can spell, so I'm going to spell it really quickly. Peralty.com. And I'm actually going to pass 1,000 posts on that blog this year, which makes me very excited.
Yeah. That puts your career total to like 1.2 billion or something. I'm not sure.
Actually, I've done the research, and I actually think I have near around 35,000 published articles online since the start of my career.
Wow.
Man, that's a lot of words. That's a lot of articles.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show. We'll have to have you back on here at some point in time. But hey, you're alumni, you know, to WordPress Weekly. So, you know, thanks for being a co-host with me for all those episodes, and all the best to you in your future endeavors, man.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was great talking to both of you.
Yeah, you too.
Not a problem. So that wraps it up. Our interview with David Peralty, really great member of the WordPress community. And before we wrap up the show here, I do want to go over a couple of news stories, some headlines, things that are making the rounds within the last week or so. And this one's kind of hopefully we don't get too deep into it because it can get nuanced with all the legalese or whatever. But the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board dismisses Automattic's trademark dispute with Chris Pearson. So if you remember back in 2015 in July, Automattic won its uniform domain name dispute resolution policy case against Chris Pearson regarding the purchase of thesis.com after the panel determined that Chris failed to establish all three elements required under the ICANN policy. And I have a link to the policy. He satisfied two of the three, but because he didn't satisfy the third one, Automattic was allowed to keep ownership of thesis.com. Now, as a way of striking back, retaliation for Chris Pearson filing UDRP case against Automattic filed a petition for cancellation with the United States Patent and Trademark Office for the DIY themes, thesis theme, and thesis trademarks, and they argued that they should be canceled. So within the past 2 years, both legal departments have been filing briefs, and there's been motions and filing for extensions, and there's a lot of boring stuff in between all of that. However, on April 20th, the Trademark and Appeal Board dismissed the case, citing a lack of evidence and testimony from Automattic that establishes real interest and a reasonable belief in damages. And I have quotes from the documents if you want to see them. Of course, it'll be linked up in the show notes. On May 22nd, Automattic filed a motion for the board to reconsider its decision, but on June 1st, the board denied the request, making its decision final. And some of the wording that's expressed by the board, I think, is very interesting. I encourage all of our listeners here to at least read the quotes I put in the article. But at the end of the day, the decision allows Pearson to retain ownership of the DIY themes, thesis theme, and thesis trademarks. And right now it's unclear if this outcome will lead to more legal actions from either party. For the love of me and the WordPress community and everyone that has watched the back and forth between Pearson and Mullenweg over the years, I hope not. I hope like this is the end of it for all that may be concerned. But it's nice to see this come to to be resolved.
I mean, as resolved as it is.
Resolved.
Right? It's kind of in a funny spot right now where you've got kind of conflicting trademark ideas and ownership ideas. So either it's bygones be bygones, or there's like a round two. And the round two I would prefer. I mean,
if there's a round two and it's initiated by Automattic, there is no good that could come of it, either for PR or what have you. I mean, for me personally, everything that's taken place here goes back to the central issue of why did Matt Mullenweg or Automattic purchasethesis.com. It may be a generic domain name. It may be a generic word. It may be that Chris Pearson has no rights or ownership to it, even though he has trademarks that have, are related to that domain. But considering the past that those two have, in my mind, I have no idea why, if I was Mullenweg, why I would do that without the reasons, a lot of the accusations or assumptions that a lot of other people have made when it comes to, vengeance or to get back at somebody for things that have happened in the past. That's what gets me. If the domain is never purchased, if that opportunity is never taken, then all of this other stuff I don't think ever happens.
I guess it depends on how much you remember or know or care to know about the, you know, decade old drama between and what the facts may or may not be of all of that stuff. Like it goes back really far. It's complicated. You don't know all the facts. Well, like, and let's say, and here's my devil's advocate, which isn't, doesn't mean that I necessarily think this, but it just throwing this out there is a really long time ago. I had noticed that someone bought jo.hn, and HN being the top level domain for Honduras. But the website that was there said coming soon. And then a year later it said coming soon. And I was like, oh, well, I wonder if there's nothing coming anytime soon. So let's ask this gentleman how much he really wants to let this domain go. And needless to say, I didn't have the $45,000 that he wanted for this domain. But if someone bought it, I don't know that my initial reaction would be to be mad that someone bought it. If Matt bought it, if either of you or David, if someone had it and you bought it, I wouldn't be upset that you bought it. Even if I said that I wanted it and then you bought it, I guess you bought it. Like, if whether or not the what the facts are, what the backstory is, if you own it, you own it. Like, I don't, that part of it seems cut and dry. Now the other part of it, that where if there's backstory or if it's malicious or if there's all the other stuff that makes it seem one way, I guess I've been involved in enough of my own situations where the facts as they are portrayed are not always as they are. And so I personally wouldn't be mad if someone else owned that domain. Would it be cool if I owned it? Of course. Would it be a thing that I would prefer to have, or if my business was tied to that, or if my life's work were tied to this thing, would I feel differently? Maybe. But I don't think that I would, or, and I wouldn't take it personally, or it wouldn't be, I wouldn't see that as like a perceived attack. But I don't know.
And I, by the way, I've had to actually delete a couple of comments here on that article from the tavern, because there was people suggesting that, the way that this transpired made Matt Mullenweg look like a raging psychopath. Now that's just, now after talking about it with my coworker and a few other people, I decided it's best to delete that comment. And I mean, come on, Matt's not a raging.
I feel like anyone who calls someone a raging psychopath is like never actually seen a raging psychopath.
Yeah.
Like a raging psychopath will kill you. Like, that's what they will do. And that is probably not what was happening here. So, wow.
Yeah, Matt is not a vengeful, raging psychopath. I mean, that makes no sense. It's ludicrous. It's one of those off-the-cuff, dumb comments that we ended up having to remove. And then on top of that, the people want to complain that that's censorship. Well, that's a load of bull. Anyways, that's that's a sidetrack into all that. That was
Mika Epstein just did a nice blog post about censorship that I really enjoyed. The difference between censorship and just
probably the one I linked to on Twitter. You probably read it.
Yeah,
it's actually back in 2013 she wrote that, but it's I always come back to it every now and then, and it's a great post. I might even link it up to you in the show notes. Why not? So Gutenberg, we got more news for Gutenberg. 0.7.0 adds opt-in user tracking. So let's talk a little bit about this for a little bit. But this new version hides placeholders on focus. What this does, it provides a cleaner experience for starting a new paragraph. So instead of seeing this weird placeholder text when you start a new paragraph, it's empty. So that makes the interface a bit cleaner. And there's also theme support for customized color palettes and shared components such as cover text and button blocks. So it's kind of a cool way to introduce an easy way to have a color palette within Gutenberg. Now, the thing that makes me raise some eyebrows here, and that I was pretty excited to see about, is that once you update the Gutenberg plugin to 0.7.0 and navigate to the editor, users are presented with an option to opt into data collection about their usage of the editor. The usage data is anonymized and does not include post content, but it's sent to WordPress.com for future analysis, where quite a few people have taken exception to that, that it's going, the data is going to automatic servers. Now, Gutenberg... Gutenberg contributor James Nyland explained how the data tracking works in a post on the Make blog, and he says that the plugin contains a mechanism to count how often specific actions happen over time. And if a user has previously clicked yes on this screen and an event occurs that has an associated bump stat call in the Gutenberg code, then this event is sent to WordPress.com servers by loading a special pixel image. So it's not groundbreaking, but they're getting usage and stats, and it's pretty cool to see the graph here. And I thought that maybe this is an opportunity or an experiment to try this usage data tracking that we've been talking about on the show. In fact, when we had Morten Rand Hendrickson on, we really went in depth on his idea of telemetry, really tracking how people are using the software and using that data in aggregate to form to have a lot of knowledge to help make knowledge-based decisions on where you should go or features or things you should change in the software. And I thought maybe this could be the catalyst for that. Mm. But when on the track ticket, I'm trying to open up the discussion on WordPress telemetry, Matt Mullenweg again said that he thought it was a terrible idea, that he's not for it, and that the same types of results or the same types of data that's being collected or the trends can be obtained in non-data collecting ways.
But that shouldn't surprise anybody, really. Like, Matt has always been pretty open about his own personal opinion on the problems with design by committee or just looking at the numbers and making decisions based on that. Comments like that should not be shocking. And for what it's worth, Morten is, it's hard. The reason why people argue is because both sides are right, right? Like, do you want 100% data driven or do you want 100% off the cuff? It feels right. You really don't want either. And if everyone is like bargaining really hard for both, then you end up with a collision instead of cooperation. And so, I think it's important that everyone that wants to do what they want to do has the freedom to do what they want and then can get whatever insight that they want out of that that data and then hopefully come together to say, oh, well, this is what we learned and this is what we learned and now let's make an informed decision going forward. And the whole .com thing bugs me because if I built an amazing analytics statistics tracking platform and someone didn't want to use it because they were afraid of what I would do with it before I gave it to you, it's kind of crap. I think that's a crap perspective because or not, we Automatic doesn't necessarily have any kind of track record of, say, doing bad stuff with the data that they have. They track what they track, and then they present it back to users. Now, if there was some something wrong with Gravatar and them using it against people, or if there was something wrong with the Kismet and using it against people, or with these stats, I could say, okay, let's maybe question it or have a problem with it. But would it be better spiritually suited for WordPress.org somewhere? Yes. Does WordPress.org have a staff of 550 people to make a feature like this work for it?
No.
And so you go with the easiest alternative, because we don't want to build that for Gutenberg or for WordPress Core. And if we eventually get around to doing that, it would be probably motivated from people internally at Automattic that have way more experience with statistical analysis and scaling data to that capacity than myself or anyone else that currently has any level of access on WordPress.org. So it just is a no-brainer to use WordPress.org for stats. Why would you not? I don't know. It bugs me that that's even an issue.
Well, I'll just read this comment really quick by Christopher A. And he says that the problem is not the opt-in tracking. The problem is the data is being transmitted and stored by Automattic, a for-profit company. To make matters worse, nowhere on the opt-in does it state this. It leaves you with the impression the data is being collected by WordPress.org. I clicked yes on the tracking on Friday, but it wasn't until Sunday that it was disclosed via a blog post that the data was being sent to Automattic. I'm sure there was no malicious intent by adding the opt-in tracking. However, it is extremely tone-deaf given the current state of WordPress, end quote. So that was Christopher's thoughts on that. And
I think he's right. He's totally right. There should be some indication of where it's going. And
it just seems like common sense thing to do. I mean, if you're going to send data somewhere, you tell the user up front, be as open as you can about it.
And the thing about it is those are problems easily solved, right? Like it's an easy thing to miss. If what you're worried about is getting the data and shipping the thing and you want to work on Gutenberg and not worry about the stats, you forget. You missed a thing. I think it is a much more, it keeps my heart rate down to give everyone the benefit of the doubt that they're trying to do good, than to try and get too worked up that anyone has maliciously or has some sort of hidden intent or anything else.
So let's talk a little bit about, I got to stop that. I got to stop with this thing. I just recognize that it's such a bad habit. I'm sorry for the listeners out there. I'm going to try and work on that. But Gutenberg development team has confirmed that the Metabox API will not be formally deprecated, which a lot of developers have taken a deep breath, have exhaled, because there was a lot of discussion taking place and a lot of uncertainty on whether that would be the case. Andriy Savinko asked if WordPress plans to formally deprecate the Metabox API, and the answer is up to a certain point were unclear. However, Matthias Ventura, who is an employee at Automattic and is also one of the lead contributors to the Gutenberg project, has said no. Says the question that is not fully answered yet is how do Metaboxes work in the context of the Gutenberg editor? Should they remain the same or evolve? How can we move towards the design goals with the least amount of disruption possible? And he says that the issue has been lingering, not due to a lack of desire, but lack of resources. The primary focus for this project is to offer a rich content editing interface that optimizes for direct manipulation of user content through the notion of blocks. And he says that having used MetaBlocks extensively for various projects, he believes that blocks can offer a better step forward for many of those needs while providing a better user experience. So there's actually a list of things that they're considering on how to treat MetaBlocks. Are they something completely new? Is there a compatibility layer? Do they focus their efforts on or renew their efforts on the Fields API so that there's an API-based Metabox extensibility, things of that nature. So, John, you as a developer, I imagine you have probably had an eye on this discussion. And based on what I was reading, like the discussion on this, it felt like, depending on which direction it took, or maybe it's still like this, it was one of those milestone moments for the future of WordPress.
So for me, there was never any question that some type of Metabox support would absolutely have to exist. Like it was so, Metaboxes are such a part of the WordPress posting experience that I would never have considered that there might not be support for them. And so when the issue started to become an issue in GitHub and on Twitter and people started talking about it, I was actually surprised that anyone thought it was going to go away. And then was like, because there isn't any UI in Gutenberg for it yet, maybe that brought enough uncertainty to people's minds, like, oh, well, this is a thing that isn't here anymore that used to be there. And so what does that mean? And what does it look like? And so I think people act similarly when, you know, iOS betas get leaked, or when any piece of beta software gets leaked and a feature is missing or something isn't complete yet, or somebody announces something, but then it's not ready. And so, okay, I can kind of get that, but it's also like, because Gutenberg is just a ground up rewrite in kind of a square peg in a round hole of an interface that you're fitting a bunch of React and JavaScript stuff inside of WP Admin, where they were just not designed to work that way. And for me, it's mostly just let's give it time and wait until all of the other activity around the editing experience itself has finally started to maybe settle down, to then consider, okay, let's start pulling in the old, let's start thinking about the old stuff. Right now, everybody needs to concentrate on the new stuff to really feel comfortable with the direction that the block-based editor is going. And then once everyone kind of feels comfortable with that, it's way easier to start to bring in and think about all the old stuff and how you support it. Because
right now, it seems to be so many people are focused on the old versus the new. Yeah.
And if you worry about the old stuff too much, then you never actually concentrate on the new stuff. You really focus on all of the backwards compatibility issues that there are, of which there will be many. And so let's build Gutenberg as a block-based editor first, and then let's figure out how we make sure that everything else that came before it still works. And so I think it's really good and healthy that there's this amount of discussion about it, because it's an important issue. And if this is the time where people want to talk about it, then good, because what happens now is it's an RFP, really. It's an RFC. It's a request for comments. So we've got a lot of comments and discussion that can get front loaded. And then hopefully by the time that everyone is ready to start working on what Metabox compatibility looks like, most of the direction and the anxiety will have been filled in and figured out, and then everyone will be ready to actually sit down and work on what the code part of that looks like. And so, not that they can't be done in tandem, but you know, when you're inventing, you don't want to go back and always give yourself a history lesson. You want to look forward, not backwards. So that's my thoughts on it. And I had never considered that it would even be an option, that it would disappear.
Speaking of the CoreFields API project, it is seeing renewed interest, which is pretty cool. Now, while the team has considered various options for the Metabox problem or the compatibility issue, some members suggested that had Core, if there was a Fields API in Core, it would have made the future of Metaboxes much less of an issue. So I reached out to Scott Kingsley Clark, lead developer of the Pods framework and one of the main contributors to the Fields API project. And in the short interview I published on the Tavern, he explains what the Fields API is, what its current status is, its relationship to that discussion, and how to contribute. And for those who don't know, the Fields API project, it's a feature proposal, which actually they're kind of changing around now. They're in the process of making it a feature plugin instead of a core proposal. But what it would do is it would allow registering fields to different screens in the admin area through a single API. So for posts, this would add new meta boxes and fields within them. For users, it would add new sections and fields to the profile screen. And the goal is to integrate with all of the different admin screens, including posts, terms, users, media, and comments, and all the fields would use one API. And that idea garnered a lot of support, and there were a lot of people working on the project at the time, but it's sort of slowed down. There hasn't been much written about it on the Make blogs, and it turns out that Scott became really busy with some things going on in his life, but he's now starting to get back into the swing of things, and there's actually a couple of people who have shown renewed interest into contributing to the project. So good news on that front. And so I asked Scott, I said, well, how would this have helped with the whole Metabox thing going on, you know, the discussion that's taking place? And he says, the biggest problem I see facing Gutenberg is reining in the scope that covers metaboxes. They need to get things working for metaboxes that are already being registered and used by plugin developers. If Fields API were a part of WordPress, they would still need to keep backwards compatibility, but I could easily add a metabox with my fields into the proposed Gutenberg metaboxes, which are still in discussion with just a few lines of code. Plus, my fields and metaboxes registered using the Fields API would work just fine on pre-Gutenberg sites. So taking that into account, John, would this whole issue of metaboxes be much less of an issue if we had this Fields API in core?
Depends. It depends on what somebody's interpretation of a few lines of code and easy and and even what the plugin or the module or the component is that you would want to bolt into Gutenberg might look like. If it's a purely React-based thing, then I don't know that the Fields API would be all that useful because React would have enough components and fields that you would pull in everything that way, and the core fields would probably not even really end up getting used. But there isn't anyone more qualified to talk about fields and how they work and the relationship between them than Scott Kingsley Clark, who's really been the lead on the core fields API project since forever. So if that's what Scott says, I'd be inclined to believe him. I think one of the problems with the Fields API is kind of similar to even WPCLI for a while, where it seems like it's a very specific type of thing that only a niche group of people may really truly benefit from or take advantage of.
Or even understand.
Yep. And then by the time that you get there, you probably aren't using it anyways. You may be using some other alternative means of getting in and doing those things. Like there is CMB2 and there are other libraries out there for doing similar, although the core fields API is different in other ways and whatever else. But long story short is it's unloved because no one really sees the value or the huge benefit in what's in the core fields API yet. And I think once they do, and I don't know what that looks like, if it's like WPCLI-esque, the way that Daniel and everyone else kind of really built momentum around it, if that same recipe works for the Core Fields API project or not. But it is capable of really great and amazing things and simplifying a lot of our lives when it comes to admin area fields. And so it would be nice to see it get more attention, but I don't know how much easier that all of that would have made integrating in anything into Gutenberg or not. Depends on what the metabox integration ends up really looking like at the end of the day anyways. So I guess we'll see.
So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the news. Speaking of plugin picks of the week, or just picks of the week, I don't have any. I'm the one who's in trouble. Actually, John has a pick of the week.
He bailed
me out this time.
And mine's not a plugin. Mine is something that's way cooler than all that jazz. And so Ryan McHugh from an agency called Human Made that we've mentioned multiple times on the show took it upon himself to use the Track XML RPC API, so Track being the Python-based piece of software that gets used for actually managing the WordPress open source project, BuddyPress, BBPress, the plugins and themes repos. And WordPress has used Track for a very long time, very lovingly. And but it, you know, over time has maybe not necessarily aged super well. And so Ryan took it upon himself to use the API that Track provides to build his own interface, his own GitHub-inspired UI to make Track better without having to actually make Track better. And so if you go to, we'll put a link in the show notes, but it is currently named Not Track. Ryan has a GitHub repository and he's shared a bunch of screenshots on Twitter and other places. And it's kind of impressive what Track has exposed through XML RPC and what Ryan has been able to accomplish and bend that API into doing, and it is pretty incredible. So I would recommend people check out NotTrack if they are curious about what you can do with an XMLRPC API that you maybe never, ever wanted to do before. And if you want to see Track look a little bit more like GitHub or your favorite Git-flavored UI, that was my pick of the week, NotTrack by Ryan McHugh.
Woo, boy, hell of an episode right here, as they seem to all be. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and every other episode on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, J-E-F-F-R-0. And you, John?
At JJJ on Twitter and GitHub and JJJ.blog.
JJJ. I love that. So everybody have a safe, enjoyable rest of the week. And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody.
Bye, y'all.